Hi everyone, good morning and welcome. This is Seek Sustainable Japan. I'm JJ Walsh, your host here in Hiroshima, Japan, joined by the amazing Hana Shiraishi of Deep Japan. Thanks for joining, Hana.
Thank you for having me. It's a privilege.
Now, Hana, you are born and raised in Japan in the Yokohama and now Kamakura area. You have lived abroad, and now you are editor-in-chief of Deep Japan Online Content. Just give everyone a little description. What is Deep Japan? What can they expect there?
Yeah, Deep Japan is an English media platform, and we curate articles about all things Japan-related, whether it's food, culture, society, people. And the focus for me is really the writer's perspective. And so we have a community of writers who are all internationals, most of them are. They found a home in Japan. They've lived here for at least 3 years, a lot of them more than a decade. And they share their unique sort of perspectives and observations about all the quirky things that, you know, make the Japan identity. It's for people who are interested in learning more about Japan, whether they're coming to visit just for a short amount of time or planning on, you know, moving here for a long term. It's catered for a wide variety of audiences who are interested in Japan.
And of course, that idea to go deeper, to go beyond the typical, right? To really connect with local people and local culture and make your travel more meaningful, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Ultimately, I really want Deep Japan to be a tool for people to feel like they can understand the heart of what makes Japan, Japan. And we do have sort of more like mainstream topics covered on there as well, like ohanami, you know, like sakura, viewing, what is that? Some, you know, recommended spots to visit in Tokyo. But our core mission is to reveal the deeper sides, like countryside stories, locals, interactions with locals, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's such a beautiful design. I've written, I'm one of the team.
Yes, thank you.
You're one of the team. It's a continuation of the German International Core 50, kind of people who are deeply invested as international residents in Japan and how they can act as a bridge between the local content and things that visitors are interested in, right?
Exactly. And I feel like so much of the Japanese identity is not explained as much because there are so many unwritten rules. And I think that can intimidate a lot of visitors. They feel like, oh, are they going to, you know, follow the rules properly or be polite enough? So for Deep Japan's, you know, writers to verbalize and explain the reason why people in trains are so quiet is because they're trying to protect this collective harmony in this shared space. And there's a Japanese-ness to that. So kind of explaining the why behind these things, I feel like can help internationals understand better and help them, you know, not fit in, but not be as intimidated coming here.
Absolutely. And the visitors that I meet every day, I would say 99% are really trying to follow the local etiquette, to really blend in, to really connect meaningfully to places and people. So people really are interested in being that good kind of visitor. But having a little bit of guidance and a local insight really helps, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Because I think with the inbound booming in Japan, which is so necessary for the economy and help with regional revitalization, we really need the inbound. But also at the same time, there can be friction that comes with that, like over tourism, you know, tourists not really know how to behave in public spaces. So yeah, just kind of smoothening that friction, that's kind of my core mission too through Deep Japan.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we'll talk more about some of the strategies and ideas a little
Yes.
bit later. That's one of my passions as well. We've got a lot of great strategies. On your profile page for the website, you say, to me, there is nothing more inspiring than the Japanese pursuit of perfection, kodawari. And in your presentation at a tourism expo recently, you were talking about that with your story time, with your experience working in a convenience store. Is that
Yes.
kind of connected to that idea of the Japanese pursuit of perfection, kodawari?
Yes, 100%. Kodawari is one of my favorite Japanese concepts, or, you know, the attention to detail. I think that's also another way to explain it. But yeah, when I worked at a konbini over a decade ago at this point, it was just 4 months, but I felt like I really experienced what that kodawari is like in action. And one particular example that I talked about was on my first day when I went in. I was very nervous, but I put on my little konbini uniform and I'm getting ready to start my first day. And my senpai says, okay, so the first task for you is let's clean the toilets. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. And I'm getting ready to go. But she's like, okay, wait. Before you start, you have to take off your uniform first and then clean the toilets in your own clothes. And first I'm like, okay, why? I wonder. That's very confusing to me. And also a sense of hesitation. Like, I don't really want to clean the toilets in my cute clothes that I wore today. So I, you know, but I thought like, okay, there must be some Japanese kodawari reason for this. I couldn't think of the reason, the answer, though. I asked her and she said, it's because the uniform is what you wear in front of the customer. And so that's what you have to keep the most clean. And so we can't risk any, you know, spots on the branding that the uniform represents. And I was mind blown by this because I just thought it really captures this sort of attention to detail, the Japanese kodawari. And so understanding that, you know, next time a new person came in, I was able to sort of explain that to her and say, this is why we, you know, cleaned the bathroom with our own clothes. And in a way, like, continue on that sort of culture in a way. And I think that kind of represents something about preserving the Japanese identity in this transformative era where all this inbound is coming in. And how do we ensure that Japan stays Japan? I think there is something we can learn from this specific example of the Japanese side explaining why to me. And then me understanding, oh, wow, this is really beautiful. And then sort of carrying that forward. And so, yeah, that was a little example that I mentioned in my workshop to kind of highlight that.
That's so interesting. And there's so many little things that you've experienced going to school here in Japanese school and then international school, having the international baccalaureate, the IB study experience, and then studying abroad, but also living and working abroad, and then coming back to Japan, right? Mm-hmm. And then now working in Japan again with international travel. So I think there's a lot of things that you've experienced in your life that you can make that bridge, right? Make that connection between the international visitor and the things that they're seeing with fresh eyes, and then what you've experienced growing up here, but also seeing it from the outside as well.
Exactly. Yes. And I'm really grateful for that upbringing because I mean, I didn't know I could make so much use of it in my career, in my work now. But exactly, as you said, it's really interesting because I was born and raised in Yokohama, as you mentioned. But I've actually never been to Japanese school. My education has always been in English, in international school. So I kind of grew up in Japan, you know, knowing the language, speaking the language, understanding Japanese culture, but being in this sort of international bubble at the same time. So having a lot of international friends and sort of being in Japan, but seeing it from an outside perspective, as you say. So, right now, I feel like, me even having that surprise when my senpai told me to take off the uniform and not knowing why was a kind of a non-Japanese reaction, I think. It comes from the fact that I'm not fully Japanese, so I didn't really understand that. But then I am able to really, to ask her in Japanese and then understand. So yeah, it's this, best of both worlds kind of situation where I'm really grateful that I can make use of.
Yeah, and in that case, like I would also think that's a chance, an opportunity to use your experience and understanding and ideas to maybe make it better. Like I would say, well, how about we have some like overalls that we can use for the cleaning time? Like to preserve your own clothes, but like work clothes that you can clean in, because that might be an option that people would go for. I mean, that's something I hadn't heard of, cleaning the toilets in your own clothes. So creating a third, like kind of second uniform that's for the cleaning stuff, I think that people would go for that, you know? Like, so using kind of your creativity and discussing options and flexibility in Japan business, this is something that, you know, we assume it's always going to be, that's what we've always done and we can't change it. But actually, if you know how to discuss things in a very polite and understanding way, we can make changes. We can be a bit more flexible. And this is very connected to tourism as well, because the way Japanese travel companies, Japanese businesses have been catering to domestic tourists, which is a big market, but now have to have more flexibility and understanding to appeal and cater in hospitality to the international customer is a really important point that us working in tourism as local bridges can try to do in a more kind and collaborative and light way, right?
Exactly. I totally agree. And there are a lot of, ways in which Japan should evolve, I think, in terms of the flexibility, like, for example, having more vegan or vegetarian options to cater to international visitors, I think is such a positive change that can happen. But then at the same time, what are the things that shouldn't change? And I think that speaks to like the Japanese identity, like the omotenashi, hospitality spirit, the kodawari that I mentioned earlier. So it's very, very interesting to think where are things that the Japanese side can be or should be flexible about, and then, but at the same time, be adamant to not changing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And one of the things that needs to be considered as well is connected to that idea of heart of Japan. How do we retain a quality of life for local people, right? So when we have so many more international visitors, but also even domestic tourists coming in, and then local people feel like they're losing their value of their places they want to go to because they're so busy, or the prices are higher. There was a really interesting article from Japan Times talking about how, although inbound tourism is booming, domestic tourism is actually decreasing. And a lot of people say it's the cost, because we now have interest rates increasing, prices are going up, that more domestic tourists, even though the yen is weaker, you would think that would make a stronger domestic market. Less people, more people are being more frugal, being, you know, thinking about how they're spending money in travel. But spending did increase in tourism, even in domestic tourism. So that's very interesting, right? And I wonder how our influence of promoting international visitors and flexibility in tourism and kind of changing the quality of tourism through international tourism is maybe affecting also and enhancing how much even domestic tourists are able to spend, because we are kind of helping develop things like more experiences, more workshops in tourism. You can go try harvesting tea in the beautiful fields, tea farms and things. These kinds of things maybe weren't that available before, but now they're available for domestic tourists and international tourists. I mean, I don't have data on this, but it's a really interesting discussion. How is international tourism affecting domestic tourism, right? That's an interesting interplay.
That is so true. Yeah, because we recently, I don't know if this is a tangent, but recently Jarman International was invited to participate in a press event for a new project that is launching called the Edo Shogun Roads, and it's related to the Edo Kaido, which are the five big highways or roads that was originally established during the Edo period that all leads to Edo, like now Tokyo, Nihonbashi, but then branches out to different domains. So it's kind of the five roads that connects the rest of Japan to the capital. And this new project is to promote the different cultural experiences that you can have along the way, along these roads. And I think even for Japanese people to kind of be reminded of this history and of this network that was established hundreds of years ago, and then to be reminded or to re-experience the history through the tourism that's developing along them. I don't know, it's very the energy that brings, not just for internationals, but also for domestic. I think what you just said kind of reminded me of that. So it's very exciting, all these projects coming up.
It is. It is. And I was last year, I was teaching at University of Kyushu, and I was teaching about international business. And one of the topics, of course, is about inbound tourism and how using what we already have in Japan, these are assets. We don't have to import them. We already have culture here. We already have great local people here. These are assets in terms of a successful economy and future sustainability. And so, thinking about a lot of these very popular international experiences for visitors, and one of the examples was Japan Travel Awards winner of last year, which is a sake making experience where you can stay in the workshop area, and you can spend 3 days or a week working together, making sake together. And the Japanese students, I had a mixture of Japanese and international students, and the Japanese students said, I have never thought about this as a Japanese person, but I'm interested and I want to go try it too, right? But I don't know if this kind of experience would have been developed just for Japanese market, right? So developing it for the international market is actually opening up more opportunities for the domestic market, which is great.
Yes, exactly. And that also reminds me a point in my presentation, which I talked about one of the articles on Deep Japan written by Emily Morofushi. She lives in Shimane, and she wrote an article about this special kind of traditional tea called kamairicha, which is instead of the standard, steaming process, they actually pan fire the tea leaves in a big sort of pot. And so she talked about that, and that's a tradition that is being preserved in this small village in the deep, deep mountains of Shimane, in a village called Kakinoki, I believe. And during my presentation, I was talking about this, and I actually, Everybody in the audience pretty much was Japanese, so I asked, you know, has anybody heard of this tea before? Like, has anybody heard of this Kakinoki Village? And nobody raised their hand. They were all just like hearing about it first time. So there's also this beauty of, you know, from the international perspective, picking up these stories that even Japanese people have never heard of or thought about. Even me, like living here, being born and raised here, but I've never heard of that. There's just so much content in Japan, to be known, to be learned about, which is very
Yeah,
exciting.
that's awesome. I was trying to show the page, but it's not working for some reason.
Oh, that's okay.
That's okay. That's the fun about going live. But you know that beautiful content that you're introducing on the website, beautiful pictures. That's your job, right? Is putting together these great pictures with the content, helping people with editing the content as they before they go published. That's a really a full-time job. How do you find that? Are you enjoying that process working with the writers and creating such beautiful bridges to the international travelers to get deeper Japan ideas?
Yeah, 100%. It was definitely a learning curve, for sure, with as with anything. But I've found so much fulfillment in working with the writers and thinking and encouraging and empowering them to really let their personalities shine through. That's really my goal at this point because I feel there are just so many Japan media, Japan platforms out there. You can get information about so much already. And so for me to think about what sets Deep Japan apart. And for me, I think it's the writers, as I've mentioned, it's the people. And I really want them to feel like they can just, you know, incorporate their humor and their style of writing, and their own perspective. So, yeah, it's very meaningful to feel like I can empower them in that sense. I try my best. I don't know if I succeed all the time, but
You definitely do. And I've submitted an article about Hiroshima last year for the 80th commemorations. And that was something I was very passionate about. And it was wonderful working with you in the process and getting it published. You also talk about an article written by John Rzynski about his love of Japanese baseball and the Hanshin Tigers in Osaka, right?
Exactly. I think you've had him on your talk show maybe twice or so. And yeah, he wrote this article, just a very personal piece. it's a great photo, about his journey sort of coming to Japan and finding belonging. You know, like I think as a topic that a lot of people can resonate to if you've, you know, even travel to a different country. It's like, how do you connect with the people there and find your community, with the cultural differences and the language barrier? So he kind of walks us through his journey coming from the US and then connecting with this baseball team and the fans, Hanshin Tigers, and his culture shock, but in a positive way of feeling like his, you know, the image of Japan he had up until that certain point was Japan is a very polite and reserved society. But when he immersed himself in the wild and energetic, you know, world of Japanese baseball, he felt like this is my people. And I don't know, it's such a it's a beautiful personal piece that I think a lot of people can resonate with. So it was a really privilege for me to be able to support him in sort of spreading that story with more people.
That's awesome. I love that. And I have to mention, of course, the Hanshin Tigers are big rivals of our local Carp team.
That
Oh, carp, sorry, hunching tigers. I will never be able to cheer for you. But it's so exciting that, John has where he lives, he's become a super fan and developed so many relationships. And really deep subculture of Japan is baseball and sports, like going to sporting events. A lot of visitors talk about we have a new soccer stadium. They really want to go to a game. We went by on one of their game days, and unfortunately, all the tickets were sold out, right? So how can we make it easier for travelers to maybe book in advance, or were they really sold out for the rival side? Like, was it only the home side that we were asking about, right? Like, so there's some understanding there that maybe local international people who are deeply embedded in following certain sports teams, they can help give them insights about how to get tickets or how to enjoy a game. Definitely enjoying a game is very different from baseball or other sports in your country, right? So for example, the ninth inning, is it when they release all the balloons, right?
I think so. I can't say for certain. My brother is a big baseball fan, but not so much myself, so I'm not sure of the details. But yes, I've been to several games before, and yes, it is an experience to say the least, too, because there's also the chanting going on, and the taiko, and the trumpets, and the team songs that everybody knows the lyrics to. And the movements.
And so when we walk by the stadium on game day, I always point out, oh, look, you can see them waving the flags.
Yes.
Can you tell what they're chanting? And most visitors are like, oh, yeah, they're chanting Hiroshima, right? We pick it up. So, it's a fun part of the culture. And then a lot of visitors, of course, also go to sumo. But understanding the subculture of watching sumo. I had guests yesterday who had been to a kabuki performance in Tokyo, but they weren't prepared. Like they had a little bit of the English version of what the story was about, but they didn't know that they were supposed to bring a bento, that there was a time when everybody has like a bento break. And then they're like, oh, we are unprepared. We got no bento, So having little insights like that can really help prepare international visitors so they can understand it more. But to be honest, I think any Japanese visitor might also benefit from that same insight because unless you're really into kabuki, maybe you don't know that if you're from outside the area or you've never seen it before, right?
I actually didn't know about that. Yeah, I've actually never been.
I've never seen kabuki.
No, me neither. Yeah, it's just there's so much, and that really inspires me. Maybe we should write an article about that on the Japan.
That would
We
be good.
just
That would be
yes.
good. And then, when you came to Hiroshima, we went to Kagura together. It's so fun to, when you visit local places, to go and see the performances. On the left here, we have the Flower Festival parade that comes through Hiroshima City. On the right, this is Kagura. Kagura's performed all over Japan, but our area, Shimane, Hiroshima, it's so vibrant, it's so fun. All the costumes are amazing, right? And then when you visited, you're such a great photographer. So I know that you took some beautiful photos and you got to try on some of the heavy costumes, right?
Yes, that left an impression. It was very heavy. Several kilo, I don't know exactly the weight, but I could not believe when I put it on that this is what they dance with. And they do all the spinning motions. And then the really fast mask change, there was that technique.
Unbelievable.
It's
Unbelievable.
really, yeah, really beautiful. We need to keep that. That needs to stay.
Of
Yeah.
course, right? And
Yes,
they're
yes.
actually, I talked with Rachel Nicholson, who on the show, who's one of the translators and interpreters for the event. And she works on the really good English subtitles. So as people are watching, they can see an English version of what they're talking about, would it add more meaning to the show? And this is another example of how we need international residents who are deeply embedded in these things, who really understand them, to be able to act as that bridge to, because it's not just interpreting. It's not just an AI tool that you can just interpret the words. You have to really have someone who understands it to explain the deeper meaning, right? It's not just the word translation. And I'm sure you've experienced that many times in your career too, right? Like when you're doing the presentation in Japanese, if you did that presentation in English, you would want preparation time to do it completely different, because you're speaking in a different language, but you're also speaking with people kind of from a different cultural understanding of these concepts, right?
That is so true. Yeah, there is a necessity to sort of customize or think about the context of who you're speaking to, and then how to adjust so that it's best, you know, understood by that audience. And yeah, definitely that is something that I think we try to keep in mind in our Deep Japan articles as well. Like who is our audience? It could be people who don't know anything about Japan but are interested. It could be people who have lived here for a really long time. So we try to cater to those, you know, the diverse audiences.
Absolutely. Yeah. And your presentation here, we have a little shot of you doing the Japan presentation.
Yes.
How was it? Did you enjoy presenting? Because it's a really, like you said before we started, it was a real B2B event, right? Like you had a chance to interact with so many other travel businesses with inbound travel in Japan. So you're speaking to future collaborators, right?
Exactly. I was definitely very nervous, and my respect for presenters, professors, teachers is now like off the charts, because it was a 40-minute workshop or presentation. I don't think I've ever talked 40 minutes straight ever in my life. So that, you know, was very much a challenge, but I tried to prepare best I could and also weave in my personal experience, like the konbini, to make it, you know, something that personal. And yeah, but it was very meaningful, because I think I've been editor-in-chief for about a little more than a year now, but I've never had the opportunity to really think about and verbalize what our mission is, like what is the purpose of Deep Japan. And so through preparing for this presentation, I really got to hunker down and think, why am I doing this? And what does it mean to me? And to be able to share that ultimately with an audience. And, you know, there weren't that many people in the audience, but that's okay. As long as one person can take away, you know, one positive thing, I think that makes a difference. And so, yeah, it was very fulfilling. And if I ever have the opportunity again, I would love to do it and challenge myself. So yeah, hopefully somebody took away one thing.
That's awesome. Well, I heard from one person who was there, Toru Matsumura, who's of Chiori in Utazu in Kagawa. And he was very impressed and moved by your presentation. And he said he got a lot out of it. Let's go through some of the points from your presentation that you did. At first, you talked about the inbound tourism statistics, how it is on the rise, international tourism to Japan, or inbound tourism, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, I think the graph, I mean, of course, there's a total dip during the pandemic, but I think the inbound numbers have recovered fully and surpassed the numbers that it was pre-COVID. So there's definitely that trend of huge interest in Japan now from the world, and people are coming in. And I also feel it on a personal basis when I talk with friends from overseas and, you know, talk about Japan, or even somebody I'm meeting for the first time and I tell them I'm from Japan, a lot of the times they're like, oh, Japan is, top of my travel list. And it makes me very, very proud to hear that. And that's makes me very happy. But just there's this big, rising interest. And so that's that was the sort of the background context of my presentation. And then I went into how positive that is for Japan and how necessary that is. As I mentioned, the aging society, and there are so many, traditions and crafts that are unfortunately don't have, successors. And so for internationals to kind of come in and step in and help preserve that is a huge help. So there's that positive side, but at the same time, again, there's the friction that can come from over tourism. And so it's a very fragile sort of thing to navigate. And so that's sort of the background. And then I go into then how do we preserve, yes, exactly, this is a slide. How do we preserve the heart of Japan going forward and preserve that for future generations? And then I talk about what even is the heart of Japan. And then in my perspective, that's the Kodawari, that's the hospitality, and then go into my konbini experience. But it's just this sort of course, there's no concrete answer to this. I think it's a very complicated, it is complex, but to be able to share my thoughts and keep this conversation going, I think it's really important.
Yeah, and it's an ongoing discussion, right? And
Yes.
that's sustainable tourism. That's sustainable business. We're always trying to improve and see how we can do better and learn from our past successes, but also learn from past mistakes and build on those and always reassess, like reexamine what we're doing and how we could do better. And I think that's a very important part of the process. You also mentioned about the theme for this year, which was started by Ruth, your mom, my sister of German International, talking about this is the year of the horse. Tell us about this.
It is. And a little, personal connection to Ruth is that she is the fire horse, which is, it's not just a horse, but it's a fire horse, and it only comes once every 60 years. And so this is her year, and I think she was feeling very fired up. And how can and the year of the horse represents sort of forward momentum, and so we kind of wanted to pull from that message. So our CEO chose the word hyaku, and that was actually a word that I hadn't really come across as much before. But the first kanji he is to jump, or in a way like to fly. And so the English translation, I think closest, is something like leap forward. And so that was our word for the year for 2026. And connected to that, we also did this, participated in this inbound expo. Having a booth is something that Jarman, our company, has never done before. So taking on new challenges and riding this momentum of inbound coming in, and I think it kind of is, represents this year in a really good way. So yeah, hyaku, that was a year, and that was the image that I used of the person riding the horse in my presentation to kind of, yeah, represent that.
That's so good, right?
Yes.
Ride that horse, try new challenges, get over those hurdles. I love it.
Exactly. Do you feel that momentum as
I
well, or?
mean, we said, like, before we got started today, that a lot of people don't realize who are visiting that we are on the cusp of big change right now, because April is the start of the new year in Japan, the new year for business, the new year for schools. So when we're walking around, we see a lot of people dressed up in beautiful kimono, and they're doing special photos now because it's graduation time. It's the time to celebrate the where what you've done so far, And then starting next week, beginning of April, we're going to see a new, fresh, also people dressed up and ready to start this new year. That it doesn't start in January. It starts in April. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. So perfect timing for your presentation in March and then the leap forward from April, right?
100%. And also the season of spring, like this new life blooming. And I definitely see sakura starting to bloom today. We have a little rainy day, but the sakura is starting to bloom. And it's a beautiful time to think of new beginnings and what to do going forward, how to approach this rest of the year. So,
yeah. Awesome. Now, Hana, you are a creative person. You had a very active YouTube channel creating your own music for a long time. You're also a talented photographer. So how do you see that part of your life integrating like into what you're doing with enjoying your life or travel yourself or your work with Deep Japan? Any insights there?
Oh, that's interesting. I never really thought of the connection with music or photography, but I definitely think in terms of the personal voice that I was talking about earlier of wanting to platform our writers, you know, personalities. When I think back to, yes, oh, nostalgic. When I think back on the songs that I've written, they all come from my personal experience. And, you know, some of them are very, very vulnerable. But that was the answer that I came to when I was thinking, how do I write a song that sets it apart from all the millions of other songs out there? And that was by leveraging my own personal experience and speaking from very specific things that I've encountered. And so I think there's a similarity between, you know, using, you know, putting forth my own personal voice and then now encouraging writers to use their personal voice and platforming that in their articles and hopefully together creating these stories and articles that resonate with more people. Because I think humans are drawn to other human stories. And this is also something that I learned in my experience working with Kochi Prefecture. I worked with them and helped run their Facebook and Instagram pages for about 3 years. And we actually started a series called We Are Kochike. Kochike is like their catchphrase and it means Kochi family because the people in Kochi are extremely friendly. That's what they're known for. You go to an izakaya and people just start talking to you and there's this sort of family vibe. And so we started this series to kind of highlight internationals in Kochi who do very interesting things. And so we started posting about them and using their direct quotes in the posts, kind of like a Humans of New York kind of vibe. And that really resonated with the audience. And we would get a lot of comments saying, oh, wow, I see it's so hopeful to see someone succeed in this field in Japan. This is something I want to do as well. And so there's really something beautiful about, you know, human stories connecting with people. So I think in that sense, there is a commonality when I think back on how I approached writing songs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And it comes from personal experience, just like a deeper understanding, like your Deep Japan senpai or people who are permanent residents or long time in Japan. I saw on the website, you said, have you lived in Japan 3 years or more? Definitely think about writing for us, right? So it doesn't take too long to become a senpai, right? 3 years is a good amount of time, yeah?
Exactly. And yeah, it took us a while to come to the 3 year mark. Like we were thinking, is 1 year enough? But that's still sort of in the honeymoon phase. 3 years, we felt like you're starting to see a deeper side of Japan and you're starting to get it. And so the only condition, like everyone, the only condition is that you've lived in Japan at least 3 years, and it doesn't have to be continuously. You could have been here a year and then come back, and then in total 3 years. But if you live in Japan at least 3 years, definitely please sign up. There's a registration sort of page on our website, and your email address, name, and there's a part where you kind of fill out your profile, and there is a vetting system, so not everyone gets accepted. But I'm the one behind the scenes. I'll be looking at your profile. And yeah, I encourage you just to be personal and be genuine and authentic. And let your love of Japan come through. And of course, we want to be realistic. And it's okay, I think, to be critical, or yeah, realistic, but not
Constructive.
cynical. Constructive, exactly. That's the
Positive.
word.
Positive
Pod-y.
and constructive. Yeah.
That is the word. That is the word. Yes, constructive, not cynical.
Yeah.
That's sort of the vibe. Yeah, we're always looking for more writers to join our community. So anyone interested, please submit your application.
Awesome. Yeah. And of course, we have the link below, and people can reach out. And then talking more about like all the writers and the ideas, this was part of your presentation too, and kind of introducing this idea to Japanese businesses that people like us, longtime international residents, invested in Japan. We've made it our home, and giving our insights as a valuable part of talking about Japan tourism. Did you have any feedback, or was that interesting way kind of to introduce it to Japanese businesses who maybe haven't thought of it that way as the foreign senpai having value for the promotion of tourism in Japan?
Yeah, I think there was a sense of it, like the international community can be advocates for the Japanese side, who might have a little trouble communicating the beauty of the service they have or the product they have to an international audience. Sometimes I feel like Japanese people don't even are not even aware of how special their product is or their services, or maybe they do know, but they don't know how to communicate that. And so I tried to introduce the idea of like, please use us, use the international community. Like we get what makes your product beautiful and precious. And so let us advocate for you and communicate that with fellow internationals in a way that they will also understand.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is like I was in Utazu in Kagawa working with Toru-san and his group, and doing a nothing is famous, but everything is interesting tour development with them. And then
Cool.
showing them how, like, when I do guide training, when I do guiding, you don't have to have anything famous, but there is so much culturally relevant, traditional Japanese things in everyday nice towns like they have, which has so much visitor appeal. And as locals, and I think this is true, like I grew up in Hawaii. When I took students from Japan to Hawaii, they were teaching me things about things they found interesting, which I just took for granted because I grew up there, right? So it's very natural that that happens. But as international residents who understand and can still see with a bit of fresh eye, but also understand the deeper meaning below these things and be able to explain that and show that this has appeal, even though you see it every day, you don't think of it as an interesting thing to Japanese people you're working with. I think that is really a great way that we can also be bridge and highlight these things that, of course, to Japanese visitors, maybe you wouldn't highlight this. It may be not interesting, but to international visitors, they're going to find this tanuki statue or this torii-ge. And what is the meaning of the torii-ge? Mm-hmm. Like the foundation of Japanese culture, and just explaining it in a simple but engaging way is another way that Deep Japan and us as international senpai that we can help with the tourism boom, right?
100%. And there was another example that I brought up in my presentation, which was an article that I actually wrote, but it's about Kakujoro, which is a traditional ryokan in Aichi Prefecture. It's about 2-hour drive from Nagoya City. And when I visited there, what struck me was the wooden plaque before entering the room had one kanji on it, and that was the name of the room. It was Hagi. Hagi is a autumn flower in Japan, and that really struck me. Oh wow, ryokan rooms are typically have names instead of numbers, which is different from hotels, which are usually numbered based on the, you know, the floor, and which makes sense because hotels typically, the rooms are standardized and the layouts are all the same. But in a ryokan, every room has its own character and own layout and personality. And I wrote this article sort of talking about the connection between the name Hagi and how that is the feeling of that autumn, the color scheme is represented in the room. Because when I looked in the room, when I looked around, the browns, the reds, the greens, it really gave a sort of autumn feel. And Hagi, the flower, is also, I think it's a bush clover. I think that's the English name. and it represents a couple different things. I think one was contemplation, modesty, and tenderness. And it's because it's related to the way in which it blooms with like these little flowers on these branches that sort of tilt downwards. And that shape represents someone deep in thought. So it's like contemplation and kind of a shyness. So it's modesty. And so it represents this sort of understated beauty. And when I was in the room looking around, I also really felt like there was no one element or interior that really stood out. They were all kind of blending beautifully together in a really subtle way. And so there was this, I mean, somebody really thought about this name and gave this room this name with this kind of thought process. And that again is something that was not explained at all. Like there was no, you know, how to read the kanji wasn't even there in English. Even on the website, there was no explanation as to why this room might have been named Hagi. But for me to then write an article about it and pick up that is actually a really precious story and help hopefully other internationals when they read that, not just if they visit Kakujoro, but if they visit any ryokan across Japan, they might think, oh, what does this name mean? And they might even ask the staff, and it enriches their experience and, you know, helps them feel closer to the heart of Japan. So I think that was another example that I brought up to as another way for us to sort of advocate for these precious stories that I think Japanese people don't even realize are there. Yeah.
But yeah. Then if you talked about that with Japanese people, and they would be interested in the fact that you're interested and maybe not realize that that was a point of appeal as well, right? Mm. So it's all good. It's all positive. Yeah. It's all talking about the importance of preserving culture, especially when it's like these traditional houses. Mm-hmm. Why should we preserve these houses? Well, they are filled with Japanese craftsmanship and artisan culture, and we don't want to lose these things, you know, like even rice growing. Could you imagine Japan's landscape without all the rice paddies, right? So there's so many things that, of course, if you were born and raised in Japan, you might take for granted, but they have so much importance, of course, for local people, but also for the international traveler appeal. That we don't want all modern hotels. We don't want all of our destinations to look the same. We don't want everybody to only visit Tokyo, Osaka, right? But we want these deeper, diverse, varied, traditional, cultural, real experiences, right?
Exactly. And yeah, another, I guess, purpose of Deep Japan is that I think understanding can influence behavior sometimes. And so by someone learning about the pan fire tea in the deep Shimane mountains, the international might think, you know, every year we visit Kyoto, but this time maybe we'll go to Shimane or go to another countryside destination. And that helps with, you know, combat over tourism in a way, which is the friction that can come with all this transformation. So, of course, that's something that I can't measure and I can't fully see how much our Deep Japan articles is influencing behavior. But that's another underlying purpose, I feel, in sharing these deep stories, is that hopefully it can influence. Yeah,
absolutely. Kind of, and the fact that these are written by real people, this is not AI generated content, which we in the content creation world right now around the world, we are battling with scraped, you know, AI curated information, which is not written by real people, which is not written by people here in Japan. So what you're doing with Deep Japan and real writers who are really here in Japan, who really care about these things, is more important than ever, I would say.
Yes, exactly. And that's another reason to really platform the writer's voice and personality, is that AI can't do that. You know, you can prompt AI to think of a personal angle to this story, but organically for it to come from a human, for it to come from the writers, I think is really beautiful. And there are a lot of, you know, it's an evolving time. There's a lot of ways, and then I do believe that AI has some positive aspects too, but to ensure that this human side and is celebrated and preserved is also very important. So we try to do that.
Fantastic. Now we just a shout out to Nori on YouTube. Thanks for all your emojis. Very enthusiastically following what you're saying, Hannah. Oh.
Thank you. Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you.
Have a few more minutes. Is there anything coming up this year that you'd like to talk about, or any project you're working on now you're kind of excited about, or personally or professionally, anything exciting coming up?
Well, from the
that's totally okay.
During the Inbound Expo, I mean, we got to interact and learn about so many different businesses in Japan doing interesting things. Lawson was one of them. We got to interact with one of them and see maybe there's a potential for collaboration, because Jarman, it's not just Deep Japan, but we also do like consulting, translation work, training. And so from the connections that we made at the expo to kind of build on that and think of more ways in which we can expand our support of Japanese companies and organizations is a very, very exciting thing. I know that wasn't really a specific, it's more of a general thing,
No,
but yeah, I'm really excited. All these new collaborations might come from it. So,
that's awesome. Well, I always ask visitors, what's your favorite convenience store? And I always tell them my favorite convenience store is Lawson, because Lawson is the help to the rural communities. Did you know that if a rural community loses their supermarket, it's usually a Lawson that moves in and they become like the local market for that area? And so I have a lot of respect for that business model to come in where people need access to fresh food and services. I mean, everybody in Japan, we pay our taxes sometimes at convenience stores. We have it as an ATM. It is, where we buy concert tickets. It is a connection to a lot of Japanese life and business, right? Where you make copies, right? So it has become much more than just a convenience store. And so I have a lot of respect for Lawson and their business philosophy. Plus, it's one of the only convenience stores that has craft beer, and I'm a fan of craft beer in Japan.
Wow. Love it. Yeah, I
There
mean,
you go.
I don't know if I mentioned, but what the company I worked at was a Lawson. So
Okay.
I feel like, yes, I am a lifelong fan of
I love
Lawson.
this illustration of you working at the
Yes,
Lawson. That's awesome.
exactly. Exactly. I had a lot of fun putting that graphic together.
That's so cute. Well, thank you so much, Hannah, for joining and sharing some of your ideas. And thank you always for your amazing work with Deep Japan. And I hope to hear a new original song that plays when people go to Deep Japan, maybe created by Hana Shiraishi. I don't know.
Ooh, I might need to get out my little keyboard and guitar. Okay, well, think about it. Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure. Thank you for all that you do as well. All of your interviews and highlighting these interesting, amazing people that doing wonderful things in Japan. You are really helping the community. Just thank you so much for all that you do.
Aw, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, it's great having people like you on, and I don't talk to enough young people of your generation, so I really appreciate your enthusiasm and your point of view, which is different from my generation and different from the upper generation. So we need to represent your generation
Yes,
more.
Gen Z, let's go.
Yay. All right, thanks everyone for joining, and we'll see you next
Okay.
time. Thanks, Hannah.
Thank you. Bye.